Okay. So first, just an addendum on last week. Having to take a, you never know what books you're going to find in the Vaughan Library. They're very responsive when you ask them to buy a book. So like you get all these books that clearly somebody at some point just asked them, and it shows up on the shelf. And I just like go to the Jewish Studies Bible section sometimes and see what's new. So they had a book by Professor James Kugel, who, well, I don't necessarily agree with his theology, is an excellent historian of Parshanut. And he has a book just on sort of the middle Parshiot of Bereishis called Jacob's Ladder from like Yaakov, whatever. But he has a whole chapter on the choosing of Levi. And apparently this, the motif that I'd mentioned last week from the Book of Jubilees, that Levi was given his status already in the time of Shechem, right, when he stood up for Dinah, and Shechem is actually a very very widespread position in the sort of early material, the Jewish material, not, as I said, like the Jubilees, not rabbinic material necessarily, but it wasn't only rabbinic Jews; all Jews were writing parshanut, writing interpretation on the Torah. So there is this whole tradition of Levi being chosen after Shechem, but that's not even the whole story. There's traditions of him having prophetic dreams where Hashem said, "You are going to be chosen." There are even, and this is, I don't want to give a whole, sort of addendum share like I did with the biblical explosion. So instead I incorporated it into my parsha for this week in Toronto Torah. But what actually makes into some of the Midrashim, and to pick it, Rabbi Eliezer, is that at the beginning of this week's parsha, Yaakov promises to God that if he takes care of him, so he'll give Maaser Mikol, or he'll give him 10% of everything that he has. So in Pirkei Divrei Eliezer, and this is a tradition found also in many sort of early non-rabbinic Jewish texts, but it's in Pirkei Divrei Eliezer as well, say that when he fought the Malach, so why was he fighting the Malach? So the Midrash says, well, he fought the Malach. The Malach came to him and said, Yaakov, you promised to give 10% of your property to Hashem, and you didn't do it yet. So he came to punish him. So Yaakov said, "Oh, I'm sorry," and counts out his cattle, and he separates 10%. And then the angel says to him, "But wait a second, you have sons. You also own 10% of your sons to God." So he counts out his sons. And then there are two versions of this that appear in the Midrash. One is, he counts backwards from Binyamin. Right. Now, this is the process of called Maaser Behema. And Maaser Behema, the way you figure out your 10th animal is you just count in order, and every 10th animal is Maaser. So he counts his sons backwards from Binyamin. Now, the Midrash doesn't explain why it starts from Binyamin. B, it doesn't explain how it could possibly be Binyamin, because Binyamin isn't born yet. But leaving that problem aside, he counts backwards, and right, since Levi is the third son, that means he's the 10th from the back. Right, so that gets you to 10. Alternatively, he takes out the 4 firstborns. Why? I'm not sure. Right? I mean, from each mother. And then he counts the 8 remaining sons. Now, since Levi is the second non-firstborn, right, this is a bit complicated, but right, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, right, Yisachar, Zvulun is 5. Right? And then you have 1 son from each of the from each of the Pilagshim plus 1 from Rachel, right? Only Leah has more than 2, right? So that's 8, right? 8 sons. So then you have to start again. Shimon, Levi is 10, right? So Midrash says he counted Levi, and Levi therefore became the Maaser to Hashem. What does it mean to be the Maaser to Hashem? He becomes the one dedicated to the Mishkan, right? So there's this whole Midrashic tradition that it's not just Jubilees, it's also in Pirkei Eliezer, it's also in Targum Yonatan, that Levi became holy as part of this agreement that Yaakov had made with God, that there should be a Maaser, and included Maaser of people. In the Maaser Rokeach of Eliezer of Worms, the medieval period, he takes it farther. And he notes that the Gemara in Ketubot learns that while the minimum money you give is 10%, the maximum you're allowed to give is 20%. Or you're never allowed to give more than 20%. The commentaries argue whether that means even if you're fabulously wealthy and could afford to give away 90% of your property and still be rich, can you do that? But you're not supposed to give under normal circumstances, for sure, more than 20%. And the Gemara derives that from Yaakov, that Aser Asrenu Lach, I will surely tithe, but it, the Gemara's derivation is Maser twice. So he suggests that really you should expand it, that Yehuda, who is the Malchut, you really have two Shvatim that are designated to roles that they always have to fill. One is Levi and one is Yehuda. That's a function of Yaakov's promise that he gave a fifth of his children to God. So there is this whole Midrashic tradition, which is fascinating for many reasons. First of all, because it throws Levi's chosenness back already to the time of Yaakov. Now, there are books devoted to it. I'd never heard of this. There's an apocryphal work known as the Testament of Levi, right? Which we don't have in the original Hebrew. We have in, like, translation in the Greek. But telling the story of Levi, which talks about this dream that he had, that God told him he would be chosen. But whatever it is, they throw it back to Levi, the person, during either the story of Shechem, or because of this function of Maser, and that's really when the Kedusha of Levi began. So it's fascinating, first of all, for that. Second of all, it's fascinating, I think, because it sets precedent for the notion that Maser, that Staka, doesn't apply only to money, it applies to all resources. Right, and like Ramosha Feinstein has a tshuva where he says you should donate 10% of your time to helping others. But you see already a precedent that Maser isn't limited to wealth, it's something about resources. And the third thing I thought was fascinating is that it highlights something that Chazal say in other places, that status isn't viewed as a privilege, it's viewed as a responsibility, right? Because if status was a privilege, so then what do you mean? Levi gets to be higher than everyone else, the king gets to be higher, right? If you call that charity, that's clear that you're focusing on the fact that leadership roles are really a service to the community, and therefore can be viewed as master. So that's just sort of a parenthetical note of something that I saw for this week's Parsha, but related to last week.